Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
Hey, this is WWE Hall of Famer and Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle, and you're listening to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
Mike Riley, you sent me a text message this week asking me if I had listened to the Corey Graves podcast with Triple H. So, Mike Riley, I'm going to lead off with you this week. What did you think of the conversation? Why did you want me to take a listen to it?
Well, you know, there wasn't so much happening this week in the wrestling world compared to last week, of course, with the releases, XFL, state of Florida, and everything along those lines. So I thought it was a fairly quiet week. And then when Corey Graves has a big guest such as Triple H, and then all stemming around his 25-year anniversary with the company. So the fact that they are honoring Triple H for 25 years in WWE, when I first heard that, it was like, oh my God, does this guy have that much of an ego to honor himself? And, you know, over the course of time, he's won these matches. He's squashed people. It pissed me off. Still pisses me off to this day how he beat Mick Foley in Hartford on that Hell in the Cell there in February of, I think it was 2000. I was furious over that. It just absolutely buried Foley over time. And it's just like, wow, he really – and then, of course, Sting in WrestleMania 31. So long story short, did he really need to do that? Well, after hearing the podcast, you know, maybe it's just Triple H saying that, but it's what the WWE wanted to do for his 25-year anniversary. But from what I heard from the whole thing, though, it's very important as a wrestling fan to hear the logistics as everything went down that particular week of March for how they are moving forward still with no live crowds and everything. And just a background information, too, especially with the Boneyard match at WrestleMania. You spoke very in-depth about and the production on that, how he was behind that with Jeremy Borash, and Vince kind of just deflected it off to him. And obviously just hearing from, you know, he's probably the future of the WWE as the ownership. You got a real firsthand look at it when you listen carefully through the lines as to what he did have to tell Corey Graves. So I think, again, for a slow week, it was a big thing for any wrestling fan to listen to with Triple H. And I'll share some more thoughts after you hear what you have to say, James, about from the podcast with Corey Graves.
So listen to it last night being Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And Hunter going through the events of March 11th is interesting, leading to the taping of WrestleMania. The fact that he said Vince was the first person who threw it out there. He's like, oh man, we might have to do WrestleMania at the Performance Center. So that tells me that Vince has an awareness of what's going on, and I think the perception is that he doesn't. And that's kind of the details are interesting. And I wish Hunter would do more of that stuff. Like, I think in this case, he was being truthful. I don't always get that vibe when I'm listening to Hunter. Or sometimes he's truthful in the wrong way, like that comment he made about Paige a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature. I wish he wouldn't continuously call undersized wrestlers and shame them for it, because that's not his fault. I mean, we all can't avoid the drug performance testing thing, you know? I mean, we're not all part-time wrestlers. We're full-time wrestlers, and, you know, there's a performance... there's a performance advantage that part-time wrestlers have, and that is just fact. And if you want to look at Brock Lesnar, how he fails a UFC test but is in the clear for a WWE test, that is your example. And then if you go to the CM Punk podcast, where CM Punk asks Triple H directly if he has been tested, and, well, that apparently went silent, according to CM Punk. So before we transition into what I think is an interesting topic, did you have other points that you wanted to focus on with relation to this, or did you just want to go into a look at Triple H's career since 1995 and where he ranks?
Well, yeah, just I'll say I did find it interesting for Triple H to make the comment, too, about how he enjoyed the two nights of WrestleMania. And I think that's a real big tease here for the future of WrestleMania, if it is going to be two nights of that. And that does tie in. I know we're going to talk about that with the quarterly call with Vince McMahon and the investors, too. So some stuff on that to, you know, parallels as to what went down this week. Very business related in WWE. But any fan, though, should really listen to that interview with Corey Graves, because it does tell you the in-depth discussion of the background of decision-making in WWE. Very enjoyable stuff with Triple H on there.
So, Mike, here's the issue right now with two nights of WrestleMania.
Yep.
That means you eliminate NXT TakeOver.
I know.
Right?
That's a big...
Because Hall of Fame on Thursday, SmackDown on Friday, Saturday and Sunday are now WrestleMania. And then you've got Monday Night Raw. Or are you doing TakeOver on USA Network now? The Wednesday before WrestleMania or the Wednesday after WrestleMania?
Right. Or
because TakeOver is a big deal, Mike. TakeOver is a big deal. I mean, are you going to put TakeOver Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon? Because now you're burning out your audience.
And that was one of my concerns, too, excuse me, this year, with the likes of Rhea Ripley on the WrestleMania card. Excuse me. With Rhea Ripley on the WrestleMania card, you didn't have
her on
the...
For those keeping score, Mike does not have coronavirus. Do not add him to the list of people who have coronavirus.
I've thank God, knock on wood, as of April 20, whatever the hell this is, 26 here. But yes, Rhea Ripley on the card there for WrestleMania, it's like, okay, she's not going to be in the NXT TakeOver one. That's a big... gap right there. So that's a huge thing for the TakeOver, not, you know, losing talent like that. So you could possibly, if you are going to do the two nights of WrestleMania, keep the TakeOver, move the Hall of Fame to like
SummerSlam weekend, Survivor Series weekend, Royal Rumble weekend.
But if they want to keep that there during the WrestleMania aspect, if you're going to do two nights of it, the first hour pre-show Hall of Fame.
No, they wouldn't do it because they still want to sell tickets to it.
And then you could do TakeOver. I could say move it to Friday of SmackDown, where you just give everyone on the SmackDown roster that night off, because that's going to be an all-talking show. Move TakeOver to Friday in lieu of that.
So NXT TakeOver is going to be on Fox?
Sure. Fox would love that.
Fox didn't pay for NXT. They paid for SmackDown.
Yeah, I know. I'm just talking out loud here with scenarios.
Yeah, and I'm not blaming you I'm not yelling you at this point for this, because it's just you have too much wrestling content, and and maybe this is the end of the Hall of Fame.
Right, and I'm fine with SummerSlam or Survivor. I mean, that's how it did start at Survivor Series weekend.
But then it can't be, because the Hall of Fame still sells tickets. There's still people who want to come in for the nostalgia of it. It's Thursday. It's not Saturday. So TakeOver is no longer part of WrestleMania weekend. That's the answer.
Which absolutely, you just absolutely killed the TakeOver hardcore fan would always looks forward to that. Now you could,
you have Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte for the NXT Women's Championship. You have Adam Cole versus Velveteen Dream. For the NXT Championship, you feature one NXT match on each night of WrestleMania.
And, And maybe we got that foreshadow back in February with the NXT TakeOver Portland. That might be the future of the TakeOver here, where it's not specifically on a pay-per-view weekend.
Although so maybe maybe Adam Cole's too old to take on Velveteen Dream. And never mind, he said he didn't.
Oh, what a mess.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of old people, Triple H celebrated his 25th year in WWF, WWE. This kind of like we're celebrating Triple H at 25 years. Like this is kind of what we're doing for programming now. Like he deserves it in the way that he's a WWE lifer. He's an executive, all that stuff. I don't buy for a second that he didn't suggest this, by the way. I promise you he did. I bet Sean pushed for it too. They went to Vince and they're like, we got to do this. This will be good bleep, man. This will be good bleep. And Vince is like, oh, I'm all for it. My son-in-law, I can admit on TV that he's my son-in-law, even though they've done it in the past. But be that as it may. So I will admit, I feel like we've evaluated Triple H in the past, and I don't remember the details. So that's kind of the preamble that if I say something different than when we did the topic before, oh, well, it's how I feel today and how I felt at the time. But in terms of since 1995 in the WWE, if I'm ranking wrestlers, superstars, WWF superstars, we have Attitude. If I'm ranking them, I have Triple H around 7, 8, or 9. He's top 10 for sure, but my list is, and this is in no particular order, but it's Austin, Rock, Cena, Taker. Those are your big four. And then Jericho or Michaels would be in that fifth slot. And then I have Mick Foley, Triple H, Randy Orton, Edge, Brock Lesnar, Bret Hart, Batista. I have kind of all those guys.
Bret Hart.
Yeah, and Bret is a bias for me because I love Bret, as is Jericho over Michaels, if you want to rank them, and Foley being in there. The issue with Bret Hart and Mick Foley is they're on the very short end of that 25-year window, like very short end. So if you're looking at longevity, Triple H has outlasted, as far as WWF ring goes, he outlasted The Rock. He outlasted Austin. Cena wrestled a mini movie. Taker's doing mini movies. Shawn's retired. So Randy Orton is still going. Edge just came back. Kurt Angle just got fired. Brock Lesnar's a part-time guy. Batista just retired. So he's kind of outlasted them all. So in my opinion, as far as like performer goes, he's in the top 10 for sure. And it's a matter of how you want to rank longevity, money drawing, all that stuff. But he's a top 10 performer. I think I have him. I can make the argument that he's as high as 5. I have him somewhere 7, 8, 9. And that, and I will fully admit that he's just, Triple H has never like sung to me really loudly. He had that run where from DX to Evolution, and he was the number one bad guy in WWF. But then he kind of had some inconsistencies. And I just was kind of like, Triple H is here. Which maybe he's in the same category for me as a Randy Orton, where he can really turn it on big when he needs to, but he just chooses not to, or I'm just bored by him. There's a case to be made that he's one of the most underappreciated wrestlers in the last 25 years. I'm not making that case, but there is a case to be made with it. So, Mike Riley, where do you rank Triple H? I'm the game. I'm boring.
Well, that's it. Yeah, like, it's kind of like vanilla. Not a lot of flavor to him there. If you're in that, if you like him, God love you. That's great. But I think he will be known when it's all said and done as a leader of factions. DX, Evolution. He did reinvent the, Ric Flair in Evolution. He gave that jump start there to Randy Orton. Then, of course, Batista, for that matter. But DxO, he helped the New Age Outlaws, X-Pac too. He gave them all a new character development, I guess, if you will. China, he'll always be part of that there, and that went down kind of sour behind the scenes, as we know. But you know, I'm in your ballpark, James, like second tier, top 10 of the Attitude Era up until now, the past 25 years. Say what you want about him, but he does answer the bell. You know, you throw him in a spot, he'll do it. Maybe you don't.
Well, for example, he was thrown into the Royal Rumble before WrestleMania 32.
Exactly.
To win the championship, and people popped for it because they thought it was awesome. And then they got to Dallas, and they made the wrong call for that match in Dallas because Triple H still thinks he's Ric Flair. And that match just bad time. And by the way, in Dallas, like you can't hear it now, but we were there. People wanted Triple H to retain.
Yeah, some of them did. Yeah, I know. And then also, you know, he did have two good WrestleMania matches, I thought, with The Undertaker. The Hell in the Cell, the one the year before was actually not a bad match in Atlanta.
You liked the Atlanta match? I thought the Atlanta match was terrible.
Well, so Undertaker, you know, still had the streak with him. And it just felt like any minute he was going to lose it at any minute there, because Triple H really, it kind of felt more like a win for Triple H when you look at it in the end. Because Taker kind of had that submission and was passed out and so forth.
But I thought the drama in that match, like, if you want to tell me that 17 and 28, so that would be Houston at the Astrodome and Miami were good matches, I'll give you that. That one in Atlanta, Mike, that was a terrible match.
It was the anticipation for me on the edge of my seat with The Undertaker as a streaking end. That's why I just was like so into that.
No, that's okay. Mike, you're allowed to have your opinion. I'm just telling you your opinion's wrong.
No, yeah. Well, jackass. You know, the other thing too, Triple H, like even that WrestleMania 18 match with Chris Jericho, poor timing after The Rock and Hulk Hogan.
Underappreciated match.
In these big matches there where people don't really care so much in a situation like that. So that's why I don't think he has that real fan attachment like a Stone Cold, a Rock, Undertaker. You know, we know what the whole background of him and Stephanie and everything. So I think there's a little disrespect level there on that sense with some fans. But say what you want, 25 years, he's had a good career. I don't look at him as a top five tier superstar in the 25 year category, but I get what WWE is doing here to fill the void with all the content of Triple H that they've had over a quarter of a century at this point.
And wow, does Vince look old?
Oh my God, he does not look like he did 25 years ago. That's for sure.
When Vince came out for the opening of SmackDown on Fox, I'm like, oh, he looks old. And then he was out there for an extended period of time Friday night. I'm like, wow, he looks really old.
You know what I really noticed?
And this is why he doesn't want to be on TV, by the way.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, and this was his whole point about Jim Ross and Howard Finkel and all those people, is nobody wants to see old people on TV. And Vince is trying not to be on TV, but they talked him into that one.
I noticed it really with the 25th anniversary show of Raw a couple of years ago when Stone Cold gave him the stunner. I'm like, Vince can't sell it. Can't do it anymore. Done. But yeah, you notice like WrestleMania, it was Stephanie McMahon who was at the forefront there, welcoming everyone. That she's the face of the company now instead of him. You know,
she's the chief brand officer.
Yep, that's it.
So, Mike Riley, my lead thought this week has to do with SummerSlam, and I have a concern over SummerSlam in Boston this year. And I understand that SummerSlam is about 4 months away. And a lot can and hopefully will change as it relates to the world right now. But as a person who's given me NFL-related nuggets told me, she thinks the NFL isn't going to have a season, or the season will have no fans in the stadium. Ooh. And I heard that, and I went, ooh, SummerSlam, a little worried about SummerSlam. President Trump seems optimistic that this virus and this invisible enemy is just going to go away one day, and I hope he's right. I appreciate the optimism, but right now, as we're recording this in April, I'm having difficulty picturing it. So I'm capital C concerned about if SummerSlam is going to happen in Boston this year. But I think that in the same way that WrestleMania is going to end up in Tampa after Los Angeles, I think they'll just push Boston SummerSlam back a year or 2 years, whatever it is. But I think eventually when we get back to some sort of normalcy, there will be a SummerSlam in Boston. But that also makes me wonder about live events going forward. And Vince McMahon did his investment call, and he was asked if WWE could film at Full Sail University with a live audience practicing social distancing. Vince talked about how he wasn't sure what live audience will mean anymore. But Mike Riley, if mm-hmm. anyone knows how to do it in a safe and exciting way, it's us.
Yeah.
And he said that they will be likely first like they always are. He said he doesn't know if, and this is the thing. Vince also said he doesn't know if the company will be in the live event business as they were before. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into all the financial stuff and all that stuff. So this got me on a few different levels.
Yeah.
First of all, Vince says the first like they always are is insulting to my intelligence, to your intelligence, and to every wrestling fan's intelligence. Let's go with a more recent example here, and we'll get back to the whole live event thing. But I just want to, Vince McMahon likes to change history and rewrite history and be, yeah, team. AEW changes how they shoot TV. And you know what happens? WWE changes how they shoot TV. If we want to go even further back in history, for those younger fans, and granted, I wasn't alive when this happened, so this is me doing research, but it's readily available for you. Vince wasn't the first national company. That was Georgia Championship Wrestling, 1979 on TBS. He wasn't the first USA Network. That was Joe Blanchard's Southwest Championship Wrestling in 1982. And a year later, Vince bought the time slot from USA Network and ran All American Wrestling. As for this global presence, that was not Vince McMahon either. That was World Class Championship Wrestling, which was based out of Texas and promoted by the Von Erich family. Hulk Hogan was a made star in the AWA, which yep. had generational viewership because they were on the Dumont Network. Google it in your Yahoo search or whatever search you want to. Find out what the Dumont Network is. And by the way, Hogan might not have even been made in the AWA. He actually might have been made by doing a Rocky movie, Rocky III, Sylvester Stallone. You might have heard of him. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, Vince McMahon Sr. didn't want Hulk Hogan to do the movie. So Hulk Hogan, a villain, left the Worldwide Wrestling Federation to do the movie, went to the AWA, got into a dispute over money with Vern Gagne, the then owner of the AWA, and then signed with Vince McMahon Jr. and became the world champion in about 2 months, signed supposedly a 10-year contract, blah, 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 blah. But those are the actual events as they happened. And do a little history on your own, but WWE always says they were first. Vince wasn't even the first to pay-per-view or close circuit. I think that was Starrcade with Ric Flair and Harley Race. And that was Dusty Rhodes' idea, at least the name of it. So this whole history of we did it first, no. You didn't do it first. You stole it from somebody else. And most great ideas are stolen. Like that's the way of the world. But I will say this, because I'm fair and balanced. To Vince McMahon Jr.'s credit, he put his money and his balls on the line to buy the best talent, buy the best team TV slots, and leverage pay-per-view companies out of other products to create really the monopoly that he is in wrestling right now, which takes us to where we are now, where TV companies are paying him stupid money to overexpose what pro wrestling sports entertainment is. So, anywho, sorry for the rant. I love WWF, but don't give me this CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Don't give me this one side of the story that is so biased and just kills all credibility for everything else.
That's some good stuff. There, you know, Starrcade. I looked that up while you were talking. 1983. There you go. And WrestleMania was 1984, 85. Excuse me.
But the first pay per view was WrestleMania was not on pay-per-view. It was on closed circuit.
Closed circuit.
The Wrestling Classic, which was this tournament that featured JYD winning in the finals against Randy Savage and a Hulk Hogan Piper WWF championship match. That was the first WWF pay-per-view, was the Wrestling Classic, a tournament, which Vince McMahon supposedly hates tournaments, but he tried it there. You know, pay-per-view, I think WrestleMania 2 was on pay-per-view, but if it wasn't, then WrestleMania 3 definitely was.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 87.
Right, right. So they figured out, they've built their own formula after that a little while. You know, when you just talk about Vince saying we want to be the first, I think the first thing when he says that, and we talked about this right after the coronavirus started to take full swing about a month ago, I think it rarely comes to mind for him is we will be the first to lead the way is September 13th, 2001, where the WWE was the first live event after the terrorist attacks.
Public assembly, and, 100%.
Yep, and I think that is what he is saying there. We will be the first to lead the way. Now, we heard this weekend that the NBA is going to have practice facilities open in states that are, you know, becoming open in the country. Vince did say on the conference call that they do have a backup plan if Florida is to shut down. So
it's pay Florida more money.
Well, yes, that's true, too. But you look at all these other states. Well, excuse me, not all these. Some of the states that are opening up, Oklahoma, Nevada, I believe, oh, part of Ohio a little bit. I'm sure, you know, the way I look at this, and I'm going to go into the SummerSlam part to your point on this right now. It's just if the NBA and the WWE are on the committee there with President Trump, all these commissioners and so forth, and I'll talk about the NFL thing in a minute. That is very scary to hear that. If they're doing this stuff and if they really think they can possibly have some sort of a live event maybe down the line, I just you got to have that little sense of hope that maybe they just know something is in the works here. With the, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but maybe, you know, the government can't.
Mike, there's tons of information that we don't know about.
And yes, that's, and that's what I'm saying. The government can't tell you everything.
And that's because Trump isn't telling us. That's because his experts aren't telling us. That's because the news media isn't telling us. Like, they hide tons of stuff. I work in the sports department. We hide tons of stuff. I'm sure that the news media is much dirtier than we are.
All the time, yes. So I just, for them to be possibly planning this right now, I think that's a step in the right direction. Now, in terms of SummerSlam, because that with the NFL, obviously, 32 teams around North in the 50 continental United States, or 48, I should say, contingent. That is where I'm a little nervous with that. But if they're gonna, Roger Goodell has been so gung ho on that happening. SummerSlam is just 2 weeks before the start of the NFL season. Okay, and you know what else it is also too? It's officially 3 weeks before the Boston Marathon rescheduled date. And we know how big the Boston Marathon is here in this region for the economy and just an event in general. I think that could be a test. That could be a test for the city of Boston and the region. I don't know what the logistics are going to be, but if you're going to have the marathon, people going out on Beacon Street, Boylston Street, hanging out at bars and so forth, then SummerSlam might be the prequel to what we see at the Boston Marathon. So that is why I'm not 100% concerned yet. Will I be concerned by the time July 1 rolls around and we're still in the same predicament? Absolutely. But right now, I'm holding out for hope that SummerSlam will take place in Boston because of that, with the NFL a couple of weeks after and the marathon, especially 3 weeks after SummerSlam in the same city where Massachusetts has been a hotspot. We know that.
Yeah, and there's hope. Again, this is a long way away, but the hope. Yes. And by the way, what's lost is August 5th is an AEW show at Boston University.
Oh, that's right.
That's what gets lost in all of this, right? Like, if you had to have me make a prediction, Boston, Massachusetts, if you know, the whole curve thing, hopefully they start to open up June 1st. Hopefully.
Maybe before. Maybe before.
With some things. But if it's July 1st, I'll take that. But,
yeah,
you know, that's a great step. And by the way, I'm somebody like, you tell me that there's a wrestling show on July 1st, I'm going.
Absolutely.
If I have to wear like a hazmat suit, I will go. I will be there.
Just like Mike Felger when people have the flu.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just inject bleach into my body and I'll be pure. By the way, Trump didn't actually use those words, but
I know that's total spin on the media here. Yeah. And I'm not going to get political here, but I'm sorry. Total spin by the liberal media, and I'll leave it at that.
It was funny how like we had some fun with it too, but
of course,
because he never said inject into your body. And by the way, if you drink the water from the tap, you know how contaminated that stuff is. But that's a lot.
Exactly.
So we probably already have it in our body. Yep. So to the business element of this stuff, I'm wondering when it comes to live events. I wonder if Vince is looking at the business model that All Elite Wrestling has, and they're only running television shows and pay-per-views. And if you went through the quarterly investment of WWE, they lost $3.2 million on live events. And that's kind of something that I've been saying for a while, is that WWE is a TV show and live events, which I think we both enjoy more, mm-hmm. are going to eventually be no more, because it's a business loss for them. And they're getting most of their money from their TV, and that's why they look at TV ratings and downloads more than they do fan reaction and who's buying tickets. And so I think that that's something to kind of pay attention to, is that WWE might not be doing Friday, Saturday, Sunday house shows anymore. They might just be, we're going to do SmackDown on Friday. We're going to do Madison Square Garden on a Saturday night every once in a while. We're going to do a pay-per-view on Sunday, and then we're going to do Raw and NXT, and that's it.
That's like the WCW model of the late 90s, right? They didn't do house shows.
Mid-90s? They did some house shows, but they were very limited. Like, there was a time period when they were just doing TV.
There you go. Yeah. So small.
And they were taping at Universal Studio or Disney, one of those two.
Right. MGM. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I listened to Vince's call there, and you know, the numbers at this time last year, $26.2 million live event revenue. Now they're at $17.5 million. Obviously, 42 events in the first quarter this year. At this time last year, there were 92 live shows. And then the consumer product is also down at this point last year, $20.8 million. Not down so much when you think about it, $16.9 million. But listening to the whole Vince call there, very pleased with the digital aspect, because WrestleMania set large numbers in the social media and the, you know, because everyone was home. Obviously, we knew that was the case, you know, numbers of the network and everything. But as far as live events go forward here, I mean, I'm looking at three of my VIP chairs we sat front row for, which is, those are really cool. But it's like, that might be a thing of the past. That might be a thing of the past. And Vince did say that his quote was, it's not a problem, it's an opportunity. So, you know, I think he's trying to put the positive spin on it here, that we might be, this is the phase we're going to go here, and we're probably going to go more content with, I think, the movie route, especially because Money in the Bank in 2 weeks, we know how that's going to go down.
Yeah, Money in the Bank was presumably already filmed. The scavenger hunt for the briefcases, which I'm fine with.
Oh, bring it on! I'm excited.
You know, we'll see how it plays out, and because it opens a lot of doors for creativity, and, you know, what's the cliche about creativity?
Let me Google it.
Don't worry about it. There's a cliche about creativity or something like that. But, you know, this is an opportunity for them to do something different for the briefcase matches. And it'll end at the top of Titan Tower. And they probably shot like four different endings. And
yeah. Bring it on.
You know, I think the disappointing thing for me is that Sasha Banks wasn't involved in it, because she lost to Lacey Evans the other night, but it continues the slow burn of Bayley versus Sasha Banks, which hopefully will be SummerSlam in Boston, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see on that one. So that's live events. I have some dirt on Monday Night Raw. As the story was told to me, this past week's Monday Night Raw was a massive cluster. The show itself had very little news value to me on camera, but off camera, the production meeting ended at about 7:45, which is 15 minutes before the 8 p.m. airtime, 8 p.m. Eastern time airtime on USA Network. Tapings were described to me as chaos. And here's the specific example that I was given. The Viking Raider Warriors, they did a karaoke bit. That was seen by Vince McMahon for the first time when it aired. And Vince, who apparently likes them, saw it, was irate, and pulled the plug on the Paul Heyman idea, which was supposed to go on for multiple weeks. And yes, that Paul Heyman, the guy heralded as the savior from the out-of-touch Vince McMahon, wrote a karaoke bit for the Viking Raider Warriors. And I know that they're just the Viking Raiders, but they might be the War Raiders next week or the Viking Warriors or whatever. But Vince likes them, but he's changed their name six times.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one specific example that I was given. And I just want to follow up on something with the Viking Raiders. And this might be an indication about how much Vince actually likes them. Mike, do you remember the best tag team in the world gauntlet match that Gallows and Anderson won out of nowhere? This is one of the Saudi Arabia shows. If you don't, it's okay, because
no,
nobody else
I
does
don't.
Either.
Yeah, I don't remember it. Yeah,
yeah, don't worry about it, because nobody else remembers it.
I try
it
to erase a lot of stuff from the Saudi Arabia thing, although unfortunately the most recent one was like probably the last time the world was normal.
They're going back there in November or December. So as the story was told to me, the Viking Raiders, try it in English and don't let your sinuses and anything else get in the way. The Viking Raiders were originally supposed to win that match, and the last team they were going to beat, Mike Riley, was the Dudley Boys.
Oh, gosh.
Yes, Bubba Ray and Devon Dudley were supposed to go to Saudi Arabia and lose to the Viking Raiders in the last match of the gauntlet. And you're going to say, oh, well, but isn't Bully Ray, Bubba Dudley, like part of Ring of Honor? And the answer is yes. WWE was going to buy out Bully Ray, Bubba Ray Dudley's Ring of Honor contract to have the Dudleys come in and put over the Viking Raiders.
Oh, dear Lord.
But that idea was nixed, presumably by Bubba Ray Dudley, Bully Ray. Mm-hmm. So once that didn't happen, it sent the Viking Raiders into a place of unknown. And the Viking Raiders were actually supposed to have a WrestleMania program with AOP. But whoever it was finally figured out that AOP is terrible. And that's the reason why Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy won the tag team titles from the Viking Raiders and not the AOP. So that's a little bit of kind of dated information, but I think it's interesting that the Dudley Boys were supposed to lose to the Viking Raiders in Saudi Arabia. And because that didn't happen, it sent a whole bunch of other things into flux for a tag team that Vince McMahon supposedly likes.
Yeah, what the hell? You can't have it both ways, right? Pick a side, Vince, right?
Yep. So that is an example of the state of chaos in this case in WWE.
Dear Lord. Yeah, that's just... And here you are with, you know, I mean, for what we've seen on Raw the last few weeks... I think especially heavy with the Street Profits, Zelina Vega, Andrade, Austin Theory, guys like that. They've really been the cornerstone, and you have a chance. And, you know, we know the whole thing. There are guys that don't want to work, or they're just too nervous to. So you just
or get gals who don't want to work.
This is true.
There are gals who don't want to work because their downside guarantee is almost $1 million. So whether they work three fights or they work 300 fights, they're getting $750,000 for the next year, and they don't want to work. And you can tell by attendance of who doesn't want to work.
Right. And it just, you look at that, and I don't know. You can't be picky at this time right now. It is what it is. And Vince has gone. He may have gone soft. He may have gone soft. Not that he didn't before, but this is.
No,
just...
I think he's got too many cooks in his kitchen. And when you go from taping 3 weeks on one Saturday afternoon and letting the live events run themselves, and you're doing booking meetings with Pat Patterson and Bruce Pritchard at your poolside, and now you're a global company and you're in the air more than you probably are on the ground.
Right.
And you're still trying to make sure that you're signing off on this merchandise and this NXT and this person's contract, and everything is still floating through your desk. There's only so much time in a day for a 74-year-old man. So it's different.
Yeah. Well, I know Vince has he's got a house down in Florida too, so I'd imagine he's not making too long of a trip to and from the performance center. So work on that, you know, have that to your advantage too, VKM.
So as it relates to more WWE pettiness,
yeah,
they're supposedly not mentioning Roman Reigns' name on TV.
Yes.
And quite frankly, I haven't paid enough attention to commentary to know if that's accurate or not, but Roman Reigns has 5 kids. 2 sets of twins, and God bless him for that.
More on the way.
Nope, they were born March 9th.
Oh, okay, I thought there were
two
more.
The twins
more
were born
okay.
on March 9th.
All right, I thought there was more. Okay, never mind.
So he's got 5 kids. Two sets of twins. Remember that time that people thought Roman was suspended and because he missed a Monday Night Raw? No, his wife was giving birth.
His wife was pregnant. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
But
yep.
Hey, keep saying that he was suspended for a week.
Yeah, but he's not being allowed to. Yeah, and let's not mention his name on the air. Just, cause some sort of friction.
No, it's okay. I still read Uncle Dave. It's okay. Because we need content for the show, so why not use Uncle Dave?
Sure, why not?
So Roman has 5 kids, two sets of twins. And he said in an Instagram video today that he wants to wrestle till he's 50. So he turns 35 on May 25th. And with the way he works out and he keeps training and, you know, this reduced WWE schedule that we're anticipating, I think he's going to get to 50 without issues, which kind of adds to more reasons why he declined WrestleMania this year. He's going to get another crack at Goldberg. He's going to get another crack at a few other big time matches. And while WWE's being petty with him right now, they're not going to. He's still selling merchandise. There are people who still like Roman Reigns. I like Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the performer that he was a few years ago because they've asked him to change his style a little bit.
So he'll be 35 in May.
Yep.
At the end of May.
And he thinks he's got 15 more years.
So let's figure that out here. If he's going to be 35 at the end of the month, how many more main events of WrestleMania by the time he's 50? I will say 9. Main events.
I'll say he's got one with The Rock in Los Angeles. I think that's just a guess.
Yep.
He'll probably have an injury in there somewhere, and I hate wishing that, but that's just
that's
the economics of it.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if it's 9, but it's at least 5.
At least 5?
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, like you said, you're mentioning the merchandise sales, a popular guy. They're going to ride that hot hand right there. He is he's one of the biggest international superstars. The way they've branded him, the way they've built him, Vince tried like hell to get him over. Some people buy on him and some still don't, but I think there's more sympathy to him after he beat leukemia twice, and I think he's more of a fan favorite on that end there. For that matter, you know, there's respect to him. So I think that he has that going in his favor where you're going to see him more if you don't like him regardless, and not saying that he will be, a Hulk Hogan main event kind of guy, but I think he'll be a more main event to WrestleMania than Hulk Hogan was when it's all said and done.
And a lot of that is based on training and different styles now.
Right.
And less, like, there was more emphasis on house shows back when Hogan was doing it. So what's more impressive, main eventing so many WrestleManias or being on the road 360 days a year. I mean, it's right. a toss enough, and the economics are just different now with inflation and so on and so on and so on.
Of course.
Roman Reigns, another 15 years.
That's pretty impressive.
That struck me. That's his goal, according to him.
Okay, if he can do it, all the power to him, man.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Go Joe.
You know, it's a matter of like who he matches up with. And just on the popularity of Roman Reigns, I think I've said this before, so I'm repeating myself, or if I haven't said it on the podcast, then so be it. But when we were at SmackDown, it was still a lot of boos for Roman.
Yeah.
But the people who were cheering Roman, they had everything. They had the gloves, they had the vest, they had the t-shirt, they had the hat. Like, they were into Roman. So Roman's making that coin, so God love him, because five kids. That's
yeah. No, that's kids. Pretty good. He's
five
right
kids,
up there.
No sleep.
Five kids. And young. No, we're not talking like, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old. They're young kids.
Yep.
So, yep. Yeah.
God love him. Get that money, Roman. Get that money.
Absolutely.
I have a few things from AEW this week as they are marching towards their next pay-per-view, which was scheduled for Las Vegas. Only thing on that card is the finals of the TNT Championship Tournament. Dustin Rhodes, thinking about retirement again. Meh. Like, fabulous performer, but now we've done retirement question marks a few times in the last year, 2 years, whatever it is. Like, you left WWE because you wanted to be motivated, and you had your match with Cody and retirement. Nope, I'm not going to retire. And now, because you don't think you can beat Kip Sabin, you're going to retire. And he did beat Kip Sabin. But
moving on.
Now that's in question. Is beating Kip Sabin his career end? No.
Well, desperate times. Desperate times right now for everyone to garner that rating there. And, you know, AEW actually won this week. They had 731,000 people tune in to AEW, while NXT at 665,000. That was down 4%.
And Meltzer and Brian Alvarez celebrated because they're on the payroll. Good for them.
But AEW was up 7.
There you go. So AEW wins and the Dirt Sheet Observer celebrates. the build and the promos of Matt Hardy and Chris Jericho in the Inner Circle has been really good.
Agreed.
I'm guessing that they're going to do a mini movie with Matt Hardy and Chris Jericho. And so, it'll be wonderful.
Well, yeah, so that's the thing. I think we would have had Matt Hardy and Jericho sooner than later, but, you know, with the whole pandemic here, no fans. They're riding that hot hand with Jericho on commentary. He's been very, very good.
He's been awesome at commentary.
Yeah, and like I said a couple weeks ago here, Bobby Heenan 2.0.
Bobby Heenan, Jesse Ventura, Taz, like they're the great commentators, and Jericho has fit right in.
Right up there. Yeah, so this is, I mean, with Sammy Guevara losing to Darby Allin this week, that just puts him in a great spot right there to go up against Matt Hardy. So I think that's a big thing there. But we will get Matt Hardy and Chris Jericho eventually. I thought it was interesting, though, that Hardy promo started off with the vampire. Then he goes to real Matt Hardy, which was kind of interesting. I liked it. I thought it was cool. But it's a good spot here for Guevara.
Matt Hardy's doing multiple personalities. And there are others to come.
Yep. Can't wait.
Kenny Omega got a little bit of criticism for giving Alan Angels, who is a local wrestler from Georgia, who you might remember lost to Lance Archer. Mm-hmm. And Kenny Omega got criticism for giving him too much offense. Mm-hmm. Jericho was great. He's making fun of Alan Angels' name the whole time. And he really kind of put over the fact that Omega's one of the best in the world, but he needed a tune-up match. But maybe somebody sees something in Alan Angels as far as a performer goes, and that's why they gave him a few moments of hope. So maybe they're going to do something with him, because I can't imagine that they just randomly pick somebody off the street and like, okay, you're getting some offense on Kenny Omega.
Well, yeah, and it was a competitive match too. I mean, it was only like 4 or 5 minutes, but you know, the fact that they kept pressing the fact that Angels has 3 years experience, and he had a very, very good sell job on this all around with Omega, and a good spot to be in right there. So, yeah, maybe we'll get something from Angels down the line here. But overall, he did a fine job in the ring there with Kenny Omega.
And I want to see, I think the next time I see it will be the first time that I see it, and that is somebody critical of AEW taping live shows in May despite having shows in the can leading into their pay-per-view. So I'll wait for that. And I also think that'll be waiting a long time for Tony Khan to write a personal letter of thanks to the McMahon family for making pro wrestling essential. So I'll wait.
Bring it.
I'm still waiting.
Yep.
Okay. We'll keep waiting.
check your mail tomorrow. Dark Order package. Thought that was good to keep going after Vince on that. Just a couple notes I had on the AW still on him. And the Bubbly Bunch, too. I mean, this is just funny stuff. Again, easy stuff to fill. AEW getting very creative with their packages and utilizing that to their advantage here without the crowd. Well, you know what I mean? A real full sold out crowd. So they're doing everything to their advantage, and it's working. And it's become the better of the two shows on Wednesday night, and the numbers show. It's a fact of the matter.
Good, you're back to hating NXT. Excellent.
For now, yes.
I liked being the Elite hit their 200th episode, and they did Matt versus Nick Jackson, and that was just fun. And then they went through the highlights of everything, which is really how AEW came to be, which is kind of a cool story. So those are my kind of AEW notes. Those are yours as well. Mike, do you have a lightning round for us?
Let's do it. Here we go. So someone asked on Twitter this week, at WrestleCast 95, one superstar who never wore a world title. Who do you give it to? Just one. Never wore a world title.
Arn Anderson.
Okay, that's a good one.
Because I consider the AWA title a world championship. Mm-hmm. So that eliminates Kurt Hennig. Was Scott Hall the AWA champion?
I don't know.
I'm going to look that up because Scott Hall would be another name.
Mm-hmm.
Ted DiBiase was the popular name on the list, but since he, in the last year, bought the 24/7 title, I have to now consider him buying the world title from Andre the Giant in 1988.
True.
A valid transaction, and he was announced at the Boston Garden as the WWF champion. So Ted DiBiase goes down in history as a former world champion. By the way, Scott Hall was not the AWA world champion. So Scott Hall is another name on that list.
Okay. All right. I put Jake the Snake Roberts. He was supposed to have that good run with the Ultimate Warrior after SummerSlam 91. Warrior bails out, and he held up Vince, and it just kind of screwed up Jake for a little bit there on that for the main event status. But I think he would have been a really good world champion. Did he ever need it? No, because he had the prop there with the snake, but I think he would have been a good world champion, heel or a face for that matter, for everyone. All right, how about this one? Your favorite submission move of all time?
Favorite? The Tazmission, the Katahajimain.
Really?
Yeah, I love that thing. I love the rear naked choke. I think it's awesome.
Okay.
It's not a rear naked choke. It's a variation of a chokehold. Just because, see, and this is wrestling history, right? Who is the first person? Who is the innovator of the tap out?
The innovator?
Who was the first wrestler who made other wrestlers tap out?
The most recent I can think of,
the first, Mike.
I know.
The answer is Taz, and here's why. UFC was doing tap outs because that's what they were doing, but Taz was doing the tap out thing in wrestling first because when you're in the Taz mission, you're getting your oxygen taken out of you, so you can't say the words, I quit. So you have to make a gesture that is initiating that you're giving up because you're either tapping out or you're passing out. And that's what the Taz mission was. It was a chokehold.
Okay.
It was illegal in judo, but legal in ECW.
Okay. All right. Mine is.
I'm educating this week, Mike. I'm educating.
No, I like that. I like it. Well, you have something else on me too from last week that I'm going to throw in this week too. So
please do.
You're going to be two for two here, but I am. I go camel clutch. I just love that. You know, Sergeant Slaughter did it. Iron Sheik, of course. Love that. My and it's very tough to not put the sharpshooter up there.
Slaughter
too.
Had the Yes, he did. Well, yeah. So and when Slaughter won the world title from the Ultimate Warrior, he used the Camel's Clutch. That's right.
Yep, there you go. So I love that one too. All right, how about this one? If WWE, AEW, whatever you want, could bring back one retired pay-per-view name, which one do you bring back? WWE has the rights to all of them pretty much now with the old WCW NWO days.
Well, so so WWF is missing trademarks because Cody Rhodes just filed for Cody Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
See, I would bring back, well, they have War Games in NXT. I always like the concept of the Great American Bash, but what people don't understand about the Great American Bash was that was the National Wrestling Alliance's tour across everywhere. They were doing house shows everywhere, and then they would end it with a big pay-per-view, or they would start the tour with a big pay-per-view, and then they later just kind of stuck it in the middle for whenever they were doing Baltimore. Yep. I always liked the Great American Bash because it was a summer thing, and they changed it to just the Bash because it can't be the Great American Bash because we're global, GD.
Right.
So, well, yeah, Great American Bash
came back for a little bit in the early parts of the 2000s there. I mean, Bash at the Beach is another good one too, but then that kind of takes away from the SummerSlam. I'm going to go Halloween Havoc. Give me that one there. I mean, it would just save so much time instead of the Hell in the Cell pay-per-view in October where you can just make Hell in a Cell, I don't know, you can move that to another time during the year, maybe even, you know, in June where you had Money in the Bank before. I think that would be, or even December. So bring back Halloween Havoc for October and move Hell in the Cell around. And then finally, in honor of everyone being quarantined here, you're probably going to say, I think I know who it's going to be, but if you could be quarantined with one WWE or AEW superstar, who would it be? Wow. I thought you were going to say Charlotte, but okay.
No, because I would think little Charlotte's got Andrade, so she's not available. Mike, who would you take?
So, I mean, you know, I don't know who's available for single female wrestlers right now. I didn't so I went with the I had to go on the male side. It was tough. If you want, can it put Vince McMahon in there? I want to have so much information. I want to like talk to him and hear him out. Like, I have 1,000 questions for him. Is that allowed?
It's your question. Then you make the rules.
Then I will go Vince, but if it has to be a wrestler, if it's got to be a wrestler, then just give me The Undertaker.
So I want to pick the Usos, but it's because of a story that I can't tell.
Okay.
Because they're fun. You know, again, yep. If you put Vodka and Bailey, she's a ton of fun.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Who else is there?
It's a good question, huh?
It is. And so, like, Vince is a good answer. Tony Khan is a good answer because they're the owners. And, you know, they're very different owners.
Right.
You know, Bruce Pritchard is such a great storyteller.
Yeah.
So Bruce would be a good one.
Bruce would kick back a few.
Bruce could do a lot of damage in a lot of different ways.
We've seen him do some damage.
Yeah, we have. We have seen Bruce Pritchard do a lot of damage.
Yeah, but he's good.
You know, it's a good question, Mike, because I'm trying to balance out like what would be interesting and what would be fun.
Yeah.
And like the Vince answer is a really good answer. Tony Khan's a good answer. Bruce is a good answer. You know,
I mean, everyone always asks me, you know, would you rather have dinner with Vince McMahon or Bill Belichick? And I'm like, oh, Vince McMahon all the way. Are you kidding me? I mean, I love Belichick. I want to know some more, but I want Vince McMahon. Give me all the information that I need to hear over my lifetime of being a wrestling fan, you know?
Yeah, and Vince is so, and you'd have to give Vince like liquored up to be honest. But
how about Jim Ross?
Yeah, Jim Ross is a good time. You get him nice and liquored up.
Yep.
Or you get him eating some of that chocolate cake.
yeah. He likes his Moscow mules.
You know, Tony Schiavone's a hoot, as we know.
Schiavone. Yep.
Schiavone's a hoot. You know, I feel like Chris Jericho would be fun as long as it's not at a steakhouse and he's not leaving his title belt in the back of an Uber.
yeah.
Yeah, there's some obvious choice. You know, so like Kevin Owens, I think would be fun. I think Bray Wyatt would be fun.
Yep. A lot of creativity there too.
Yeah, The Rock and Steve Austin, they'd be fun.
Sure. Yeah. It's a good one. Well, I wonder what the people would say. We'll put that on Twitter this week. See what they say.
Yeah, I mean, those are kind of the names that come to mind.
Yeah, there you go.
I think Becky Lynch would be a hoot to hang out with.
That could be awesome. Irish girl, are you kidding me?
Becky and Charlotte hanging out together.
Awesome.
Like, that's a good time. We've seen that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we could probably leave it there.
Yeah, pretty fun, huh? There you go. Boom. So, that was my lightning round this week. I just thought.
Oh, you know who else would be a hoot to hang out with? Nikki Cross. She's a hoot to hang out with.
That's your girl.
Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. They'd be fun to hang out with.
I'd be down for that. Yep. How about the New Day? New Day is a fun guy.
Oh,
that's
New
a fun
Day
crew.
Would be a blast to hang out
right?
with.
Yeah.
They're like, they're cool. Authentic. They seem like they know how to have a good time.
Yep. I see what you're doing. You're looking around your office there, seeing who you have signed and everything. yeah, it's a good question. So
yeah, there's a lot of people who I've spent some time with and I can't share their stories, but I could tell you.
I like to keep that private as well.
Yeah, there's a story with the Usos that I'll one day tell as to why I thought of them first, because they're a good time. They're a hoot.
And I could tell you one with Drew McIntyre, but I will hold off for now too. He's a fun guy too.
Yeah, yeah.
I will tell you off the air. So there you go.
So that's your lightning round?
That's it.
All right.
Pretty good questions. Yeah, you like those?
Good questions. Good. I always appreciate when I'm stumbling around trying to figure out an answer. So that's we'll wrap up here as we hit the time limit 60-minute draw. Match of the week is something that has been requested since we did the WrestleMania match of the week leading up to it. So at the end of the shows, we're gonna try to give you a match to watch. Mike, what's your match that you think the audience should go out and seek out this week?
Good friend of the show, at Bruins Hogan, he tweeted at us as part of the Bruins World Order, and he liked what we said last week at the end of the show, and he said, go watch ECW One Night Stand, Mike Awesome, and Masaharu. Masasato Tanaka. Yeah, thank you. Not Masaharu Tanaka, Masasato Tanaka. Thank you, James. But yes, Joey Styles on commentary here with Mick Foley. Foley did a great job in the color commentary here, but Styles just came into this match absolutely tearing apart Mike Awesome on a promo. Raw superstars were there in the Hammerstein ballroom. It's where they used to tape Monday Night Raw. They were not the actual room there, but it was in that same building, though. But Styles ripping on Mike Awesome. Overall, this match was only 10 minutes long. And at one point, Mike Awesome dove outside to Tanaka, and he missed him on the table. And Styles made a comment, it's a shame he didn't take his own life. That's how much heat he had on Awesome here in this match. It was pretty funny. But Mike Awesome, though, great power bombs to Tanaka. Tanaka had a tornado DDT to Awesome through the chairs at one point. Back and forth, just brought back old ECW memories. I also thought of an ECW match after your whole ECW encyclopedia last week, which is really good, and I'm so glad Bruins Hogan recommended this one. It's only 9 minutes. Go watch the whole pay-per-view if you want to while you're in quarantine. The finishing move by Mike Awesome was great. Through the table, onto the floor, that dove onto him there for the pin where the referee had the 1-2-3 outside the ring. Good match. ECW One Night Stand 2005.
So, Mike, a few things. One is the Tanaka-Mike Awesome match, that One Night Stand was awesome, right? Mm-hmm. I thought their Heatwave 98 match was a little bit better, but I won't fight you on it. Their match at Anarchy Rules 99 where it was a three-way with Taz, and Taz was the first eliminated and then went down to Tanaka and Awesome, was when Awesome won the ECW championship. Now, the backstory. Do you know the backstory as to why Joey Styles was so critical?
Let's hear it.
Okay. So Mike Awesome was the ECW champion. He won it at Anarchy Rules against Taz. So Mike Awesome, I think Tanaka and Awesome flip-flopped it around like Christmas, New Year's, but it was back on Awesome. So Awesome is negotiating with WCW, and he shows up on Monday Nitro because this was when Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo got control of Nitro, and they were kind of doing a relaunch. So Mike Awesome shows up on Nitro as the ECW champion. So Paul Heyman gets his lawyers on it, and Mike Awesome has to drop the title. Taz, who is a WWF employee, is the one who Paul Heyman has asked for permission to get the title from Mike Awesome. So WWF star against WCW star for the ECW title in an ECW building happens on a Thursday night. I think it was in Indianapolis, Indiana. Random place. They do ECW fan cam, which is the standard thing that RF Video used to do.
Yep.
And they do this brawl around the building. Mike Awesome comes in through the crowd. He leaves through the crowd. He gets choked out by Taz really quickly. Dreamer, I think, did a DDT at some point, which was to set up the next program for Taz, where Taz loses the belt to Dreamer. They do the SmackDown thing where Bruce Pritchard lies and says that, you know, Taz being in the ring with Triple H was actually good for Taz, even though Triple H squashed both Dreamer and Taz in the course of that match. But it's a story and an angle, and bleep you, Bruce, because you're just lying because you hate ECW, but you like Paul Heyman.
And he'll never rip Triple H either.
So that is the backstory as to why Joey Styles was burying Mike Awesome on commentary.
Okay.
Is because Mike Awesome, as the ECW champion, left for WCW, came back because he was legally forced to, and dropped the title to Taz, and then ran out of the building. The unfortunate thing for Mike Awesome is he later on in his life committed suicide.
Yes. Very sad.
And that's the unfortunate thing about that piece of commentary by Joey Styles.
Yeah.
But Joey Styles, very underappreciated voice of wrestling. Like, he was.
No, he was good.
And this is actually a question, because I knew you were going to pick this match. And when did you discover ECW, Mike? If you did discover it, when it was happening.
So when, you know, like we talked about this last week, when late at night.
Channel 27, you know, 1 a.m. I had the rabbit ears.
Exactly. Yeah. Saturday nights there. I didn't watch it faithfully on a week by week basis like I did the WWF. But I would tune in, I'd say 96, 97, right around that time. Like, you know, remember Shotgun Saturday Night? That was on too.
Yep.
Like, it was, I put it on like right after that, or like flipping through. I'm like, oh, there you go.
Shotgun Saturday. Well, so ECW was Friday night at 1 a.m., which was Saturday morning. Shotgun Saturday Night was midnight on Fox. And Vince was trying to capture the ECW aura. That's why he was doing it in nightclubs, and then realized it wasn't doing anything, and it kind of fell apart.
It didn't work. Yeah, exactly. So right around that time there, and actually, I really recommend, go back and watch the New Jack Vice TV Dark Side of the Ring special. That was really good stuff. Crazy. He's bananas, but it was good stuff, though. So yeah, right around that time, middle school, 96, 97.
So my match, and I'll keep this brief since we're over an hour.
Yeah, but you know what? People love it, though, because there's nothing going on, so we're good.
Yeah, I guess.
I know. I'm with you, though. I know.
I can barely talk for an hour, let alone want to listen to me for an hour. So
we covered a lot this week.
My match to watch is Money in the Bank related. It's 2014. It's the briefcase match. It was in Boston. Seth Rollins, Rob Van Dam, Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, Kofi Kingston, Dean Ambrose. Just crazy stunt show type match. Ambrose, I thought it really who was going to win this match was either Seth Rollins or Dean Ambrose. They do the injury angle with Dean Ambrose, who returned, and I thought Seth and Ambrose were the last two. One of those two was going to get it. Kane gets involved, prevents Ambrose from winning. Choke slamming him off the ladder. drilling him with a tombstone. Seth Rollins wins the Money in the Bank briefcase in Boston. Just thought it was a fabulous match. Something that the fans should go back and watch.
Yep, that was a great pay-per-view. And that card there, too, that whole match of the guys that are in that match right there, Kofi, who later became a WWE champion, Rob Van Dam, who had a really good career, Swagger, who's now reinvented himself in AEW, Ambrose, of course, and Dolph, who's been around, very underappreciated. That's a damn good match right there, all that talent in that particular one. I remember that very well. That was good, and it's too bad Seth won.
No, Seth winning was actually the right choice that night.
I know. I'm just, you know, playing the character of me still out on him.
No, good. No, I appreciate it. We've established you're out on Seth Rollins. You hate NXT again, so we're good. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, next week is going to be our Money in the Bank preview show.
Yeah.
And I have a live on-air suggestion, and that is we should have Joe Murray join us.
I think that's a wise move. Let's do it.
All right. So next week we'll talk Money in the Bank, and Joe Murray will be joining us because he's got nothing else to do. He just does the gambling podcast, so we'll get odds on Money in the Bank. We'll have a grand old time.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks. And all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do. The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.